Oh, hey, Key.
Big girl, you are beautiful. Do you remember that one?
Don't think I do.
Whatever. It was like a fat positive anthem of the early 2000s. Find yourself to the butterfly lounge. I am curious about your road trip. Are we allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. What are you curious about? Would
I'm
you like to know
curious
the
what you're planning.
route?
I'm curious about the route. I'm curious what you're going to eat at where. I'm curious about what you're going to listen to.
So I think
And hitchhikers.
I think I'm going to go the Pennsylvania route as opposed to
Oh.
the New York route. Because I'm going to come drop something off at your house and it makes no sense to go back up to 90. So that's the route by which I will be traveling to Cleveland, Ohio, where I will be visiting my parents for the first time in like who knows how fucking long. And yeah, and we are all vaccinated, and it has been 2 weeks since my last shot, and more than 2 weeks since their last shots, so we're going to
You're gonna do some open mouth kissing. That's what y'all do in Ohio, right? It's called the old Swedish hug.
I'm excited for the road trip. I was very bad at saving all of my podcasts, so I have on my list this evening to go through and find some new stuff or old stuff or I don't know, whatever to listen to on the way there. And then I'm going to come back on Saturday. So just a little week-long jaunt to Ohio.
It's really exciting to go anywhere.
Yes.
Oh. What did I want to tell you? There was so much. And then it did that thing where it left my brain. Should we talk about the news?
What news?
Oh, okay. Can I just tell you? Let me start with a funny story about teaching this week. So I have a 3-year-old daughter. She is so smart. Everybody thinks their kid is fucking smart, but I'm right. Oh no, that's such a douchey thing to say. Everybody's got their strengths and weaknesses, and Frankie is like she's a sharp. She's sharp and she's got a really good memory, and her mom doesn't. And so we're working on the potty training thing. And she's doing pretty good, but like I said, we all have our strengths and our weaknesses. And I bring this up only because there's been a few times where I have some help with childcare from my wonderful mom down the street from time to time. And sometimes there are days where it falls through on the childcare front, and I end up teaching and momming at the same time. And for the most part, I have my emergency contingency plan set up. I have like learning stations all around so that if she gets bored and wants, I just sort of direct her to another activity while but there's just, there's some things you cannot plan for no matter how much you try. And one of them was I don't want to overshare. I want to like give my child her dignity and not overshare. But long story short,
here we are.
And I had a moment where I was convinced. I was convinced that what she was doing in the other room was taking a shit on the carpet. I was just about. I was like, "Yep, that's what's happening right now." While I'm teaching, I'm going to hold some space for people while this is. And so I, you know, I spent the class sort of mentally preparing myself for for that. And then it didn't happen. Long story short, class was over, and my daughter had in fact used the potty, but had described it very differently. and she came to, you know, there's a temptation to try to hide your life when you're teaching. Like, I don't want people to see how messy I am, or I don't want people to see the skeletons in the closet or my naked child shitting on a rug, whatever you're trying to, like, you know. And I've always resented teachers that walk into the room like fucking butterflies are flying out of their ass all the time. And you know who you are if you're listening. You do it for the good of your fucking students. Because they have enough. They should come and have a positive experience. You know, fuck that. I don't like it. I don't buy it. I think it's fake. Show me something real and then I can relate with you. I don't have time for the performance of positivity. Because then when I'm positive about something, when I'm happy about something, the people around me trust that I'm genuinely excited. You know, yeah. It's like the boy who cried frickin' goop wolf. I don't know. Anyways, I don't know where I was going with this part of the story. But yeah, so in person before COVID, I still resented teachers that sort of pretended like everything was fine in the world or in their life or in the lives of their students. And like, they do it in subtle linguistic ways, subtle, like just let it all go, kind of like exhales. And like, I don't know, there's a surfacey saccharine thing that I think mm-hmm. can happen in the new agey set. And I don't like it. And I don't like it on Zoom either.
You're right there.
I am. so I'm not saying like you have to hop on Zoom as a teacher and be like, come look at my house. I want you to see how I live and like have people see how you live. But I also am like, it's okay. It's okay, right? For us to see each other in the struggle. Like I was teaching meditation the other day and I was like, I am in no position to hold space here. But you got to show up. And meditation is different than teaching yoga. It just is. And, you know, you just have to, like, fall back on what you do in your own practice, I guess. And I find myself coming up with, like, apologies for existing and doing the work I do in the atmosphere and environment that I have access to. So... Mm-hmm. That's just a fancy way of saying, like, I have a pretty busy street right outside my window. And it can be loud. And, like, with cars and fucking, I don't know, crotch rockets. Japanese crotch rockets, you know. And, you know, that's where I live. And I find myself wondering if there are people that are, like, you know, when we're, you know, the expectation of something pristine and quiet and bell jarred and clean and pure and.
Well, don't you think, though, that that's, I mean, that has been set up now as the expectation of a yoga experience wherein, like, I don't really know of a place where there isn't, you know, noisy people in the lobby, a noisy street, pole dancers upstairs, a wild child playing the drums and piano upstairs. I'm trying to think of some other examples. There's that story that I think Leslie Kaminoff often tells about the dumpster being right outside the meditation hall and the in the middle of meditation, everything, you know, the trash being taken out out into a big, you know, dump truck. You know, there's just never been a pristine. And even when there is a pristine, like if there was a perfectly pristine and quiet place to practice, there would be something else that would kind of show up to rub you the wrong way or challenge you or, you know, whatever the case may be. But I really do think it's, I worry that we're going to get into this kind of extreme of it's either a spa environment or it's or it's some place with a ton of imperfection, because that's the only thing that independent businesses will be able to afford. And I personally love a creaky floorboard, and trying to find the one place in the room where the floor is level in order to do a handstand or where the floor is tilted advantageously to be able to get up.
I think, you know, I think the part of it I'm struggling with is the part of me that is, has internalized it. You know,
sure.
I wish I was 100% comfortable with the fact that, you know, I sometimes, you know, teach and from time to time I'm taking care of my daughter while I do it. Like I, like I feel like it's not ideal. You know, it's not ideal for my daughter. It's not ideal for the people taking my class, but it's the reality that we live in right now. And I'm doing like the best I can, just like everybody else. And I try to handle it. I try to handle it by not being frustrated or angry at my daughter, certainly, and to certainly not over apologize in class when it happens, because I don't, if somebody else experiences that when they're working, I don't want them to feel like they have to apologize when their kid's in the room. And I also had an experience the other week where I was taking over a class for somebody, and someone who is a regular, you know, in the middle of class wrote me a fairly long publicly available comment about how, you know, they wished I would demo and how all of the other teachers demo and that makes it so much easier to understand what's going on. And you're allowed to want that. That's okay. Like if that's what you need to learn, that is okay. And it is okay if I don't do that as a teacher.
Yeah. We don't get paid enough to do that.
No, yeah, I don't. And it was interesting because the teacher was referring to somebody who I know doesn't demo a lot, like from time to time, here and there. But, you know, it takes time sometimes to adjust to a different teacher and how they linguistically get you someplace. It takes time. And, you know, I think really what was happening was this person was probably just mourning that they had become used to and comfortable with a different teacher. And now they are going to have to deal with that again, or they were sort of wrestling if they even wanted to be there. And all of that is normal and okay. But I had a moment of feeling this, like, maybe I shouldn't be teaching, you know, like I can't physically demo everything. I can't, like, I had spine surgery this year and I don't want to have to keep reminding myself that it's okay that I teach in a disabled body. And like, you know, my disability doesn't come from the spine surgery. The spine surgery was a result of the autoimmune disease, but like, I don't feel shame calling it a disability, first of all, and not all disabilities are like forever. Some of them are in and out. Some of them are forever. But like, I don't want to feel shame saying that. And I certainly, if another teacher was saying this to me, I'd be like, you shut your fucking mouth. Of course you should teach. If you, Ryan, were going through this, if I were looking at you and you're like, Kate, I had neck surgery. It was pretty, took a lot out of me. And I've got this new diagnosis and I'm managing, you know, immune suppressants and my whole life is totally on its head. I would be like, oh God, teach. It's still okay. Like, but I'm really struggling to give myself that grace when I have students that are disappointed and that don't know me maybe, and are disappointed that I'm not performing asana. And it just makes me sad because it's, you know, and that's the shit I've got to work on. I got to work on like having a stronger defense shield around that. But we are such a fucking ableist community, both as students and teachers and as an institution. Like, we really, really still privilege the visual representation of the practice, the fancy fucking Instagram thing. So, you know, I will beat this drum and this horse until it comes back to life, and then I will beat it again. That's why it matters if your Instagram is filled with handstands. Because if, you know, I've been teaching long enough that it's like, man, I should feel really solid in this. But I'm trying to be honest here. Like, I have moments where I'm like, I gotta quit. I don't belong here. I'm not doing a good enough job because I am not demoing the shapes. And, you know, teachers reach out to me in private and are like, I wish I could not demo. I wish I could figure out how not to demo.
Yeah.
And then I want to be like, hey, fuck you. Why don't you try like getting sick enough or hurt enough, whatever, that you can't. And it's not an option. And then come fucking bitch into me about how you got to put food on your daughter's table. Which makes me angry and sad.
Yeah. I mean, I don't obviously wish anybody injury, but
no.
There will be a time, and I say this to newer teachers, there will be times, and hopefully they're just sort of momentary blips, where like demoing is not an option, and so you gotta, you know, even if that's not your preferred mode of teaching folks, the sort of more linguistic approach, you got to be able to flex that muscle. Otherwise it's going to be really hard in those moments where you're like, oh, I really like have to sit here and lean my back against this wall. And obviously I'm talking about an in-person class and just position myself in a way that I can see everybody well enough to instruct. And you know, those classes where when there isn't the, because even though I don't demo a lot, if I'm not able to access my words, or it's clear that people aren't understanding me, then I go to get up on my mat and show what I'm talking about. But those moments, many, many moments in my teaching career where it's just been like not an option because of sickness or injury or just shit. Those have been some of the best classes that I've ever taught. And I think one of the trickier things, though, that I think about a lot is, absolutely, I do believe that anybody who would step into my classroom who was able to move and breathe, that I would be able to teach them something. But that is diametrically at odds and opposed to the product of a yoga class. as it is known in this culture. And I don't think that the answer, I really love all of the things that are now out there about accessible yoga, but I don't know that they're really, it doesn't always feel like it's hitting the mark on that end of the spectrum either. Because
can you say more about that?
I think we've talked about this a couple episodes ago. It's just, there's still a lot of, maybe it's not missing the mark. Maybe it just feels incomplete because it still feels very much like, and now this is probably just the visual representation of it, right? If I actually sat down with the people who were really doing good advocacy around this, we would probably be in a lot of agreement, but this sort of visual presentation of it is often, okay, so you can't do Jhana Shavasana, so let's find a position in which you are seated down and you have one leg straight and you have the other leg in external rotation and abduction and flexion. And then you are turning towards the straight leg and coming forward into mild flexion a little bit. And like, yes, that is a part of the accessible conversation, right? But if we only focus on that, I think something gets really, really lost.
Do you mean like using the framework of an able-bodied practice to translate the direction and intention of a shape into something that is accessible to maybe a larger group of people? And instead of kind of like this, so when the fight for gay marriage really kicked into high gear, you know, some folks were like, hey, why are we fighting to be part of a system that is so fucked
up? Yeah.
Like, maybe we just reimagine life outside of the heteronormative, imperialist, misogynist, fascist institution that is marriage. Like, maybe instead of banging on the door to get that, we celebrate what family and commitment and community can look like in a different concept. Do you mean it kind of like that? Like, how about instead of trying to replicate what our idea of Ashtanga and or vinyasa yoga looks like, sort of watered down, why don't we look at all the other ways that one can have an asana practice outside of that framework?
Yeah, I think the difference is quite, you're walking a tightrope, I think, because it can very quickly become about, it can very quickly be held in the frame of this person can't do, ergo we modify, as opposed to the body has a fairly finite number of ways that it can move, and we're going to move people through those ranges of motion to whatever degree that they're comfortable with on that day. And how can we teach? How can we set the stage so that they feel empowered to and skilled enough to know over time what is the appropriate amount of backbend, what is the appropriate amount of forward bend, what is the appropriate amount of turn, what is the appropriate amount of side bend, what is the appropriate amount of lengthening, like what is the appropriate amount of stillness, what is the appropriate amount of movement, like it becomes an inquiry, even though it's going to look very different in every body that's in the room. And I think that's, I'm sure that's a part of what a lot of people are doing, but the sort of outward presentation of it always sort of hits a little bit of a, like, I don't know. Does that?
I mean, I think the thing that I can relate with this is, you know, sometimes seeing in yoga for everybody, healthy at every size, and yoga for larger bodies kind of teachers, which so glad there's more than there's ever been. And I celebrate everybody's work. But sometimes it's like a look. I want to be fair too. I've seen this outside of yoga too, with like, sort of fitness stuff. It's like, look, my body can perform exactly the same as, you know, somebody who is very thin and hypermobile. And I don't know that we have to prove that, like that. It still seems like earning a right to be at the table by proving compound complex shapes. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, look, no, I can do this. I can get there and I can get you there. Maybe we just use some different props. And it's like, okay, yeah, no, that's good. We should prove that. We should prove that there are tons of healthy, strong, able-bodied fat people. But like after a tick, you know, one wonders, is there something more to it? You know,
yeah. Like,
I think that for me, if I reflect on my personal sort of journey with that, I taught hot yoga and power yoga and took hot power yoga and that kind of stuff for a long time, alongside being a huge fan of, you know, restorative slow flow, Hatha, Iyengar. But I think sometimes there was part of me that was experiencing that as like proof to myself that I was allowed to participate, like as a big girl, like, okay, I can get my ass up in the air, bent and twisted. Look at me, you know, look at, you know, I can do it. See, I belong yeah. here. I'm allowed to be here. Right. And I think that, you know, I wasted a lot of time, I think, thinking that way, but I don't want to beat myself up over it. It's what I needed to do. And now I'm in a place where I'm like, okay, cool. I don't want to do that right now. Thank you.
Yeah. I guess this, oh, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, I don't want anyone to think that I don't think it can be a valuable, exciting practice. Like, it can, but only if you're genuinely doing it. Like, don't do it because you think you have to like earn your place at a table, is what I mean by that.
Well, that's what I mean. I really do wonder, because I also feel like there is this strand of marketing that's like, any yoga class is for anybody. And like, I think it's okay for someone to say, this is a class in which we will be doing headstand and forearm balance and shoulder stand. That is a part of this class. If you do not want to do that, this is not the class for you.
Okay, yeah. And it better be well described that will be in class, you know?
Yes.
Because how many times do you show up at a slow flow, for example, and maybe not know that that's on the table? We're so reliant on subtext in classes.
Sure.
You know? And that's the problem. You know, yes, absolutely. If you want to have a class that is dedicated to inversions,
yeah,
or arm balances or whatever, awesome, do it. Like when I take my daughter to gymnastics, I'm not expecting that my 3-year-old be allowed into the class with the 11-year-olds and sure. and have a wonderful experience. Like that's just kind of unfair, you know, to everyone. Yeah. So I think that that's achieved, like you said, with, you know, with allowing the classes to exist with intention and clear communication, that that's what's happening.
And I think the really slippery part of that is, how do you do that without devolving into some sort of level conversation in which the class that is including those more complex, or I don't know that they're actually, those particular poses are complex in terms of like the actual joint actions it takes you to do them. But in terms of the sort of familiarity you need to have with those postures, and with your own body in relation to those postures, that to me, it's less of a like, this is an advanced class, and more of a, we will be doing headstand. It's okay if you don't do headstand, but you need to know the alternatives that you can do to get the experience that the rest of the class is, or at least
you're not furiously writing a note to the teacher and or doing that thing where you like cross your arms and you're like, this is the ugliest face I've ever made, by the way. I look like John Candy and, God rest in peace, John, and Rosie O'Donnell circa 1997.
This is had great.
I keep forgetting this is a podcast.
Do the face again. Do the face again. I'll capture it for our...
Now, please take an after shot. One with the jawline, please. Don't take it. Did you get one where you can see my jawline?
Yes.
I won't make the same mistake twice.
Probably be a before and after shot. Before Unrolled Podcast, after Unrolled Podcast.
Thank you.
I'm not sure which one is the before.
I don't know what the answer.
I have no idea what the fucking answer is.
I do think that when it comes, it would be useful. I don't know. I had an interesting conversation with my brother about it, and he's like, I really want to take like a class that's about sort of stretch and meditation and chill. And I'm like, you asshole, I've been teaching that for like 10 years. This is your fucking sister's class, you dick. And and then he's like, where is it again? Send me the website.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's awesome. But the point of it is, I think he'd be irritated because A, it's his little sister, and B, I'm not demoing. And I know that I want to be fair, because I know that there are some people that genuinely need to see things, or it really helps them with their learning process. I just don't think it's as many people as people think they are. I think that some percentage of those people are just full of shit and they're not trying, but they want to watch a show.
Yeah. Well, it's also when that conversation, especially in the realm of Zoom, comes up, unless the teacher is stopping, saying, everybody come to your screen and look at this thing that I'm going to show you how to do, which sometimes I have to do because I'm setting up props in a particular way, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But with rare exception, is it appropriate for them to be looking at the screen at the same time?
Yes. That,
like in their pose while I am in my pose, like maybe in triangle pose, maybe in like any of those like lateral standing poses, you can get away with like.
Exactly. Yeah, but the rest of them, you're just going to twerk your fucking neck. What are you doing? Don't look at me. They're like in a headstand turning their head. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a very strange, But this always, to me, comes back to that when I began, now it's not like when I started taking yoga, there wasn't that strand of just power yoga, you come, you know, get put through the paces and then you're, you know, sweated out in a carpeted room with space heaters. that was hot power flow back in the day. So it's not that strand wasn't there, but there was much more of, at the same time, a strand of teachers in classes that were set up, I mean, beyond just Iyengar, we're set up in more of a classroom model. Like, we're here to learn something, and there will be times where we're in a pose, there'll be times where we'll be out of a pose looking at something, and there'll be times where we're, you know, helping each other out with, like, there was a more open sense of what the classroom was meant to be like. And I know that that's not popular, and people are always like, but that it breaks the flow. And I disagree. I do not think for one second, when I have been in Patricia Walden's class and she has everybody go and get a chair and then come over and look at so-and-so doing the pose in the chair, that the people in the room are, especially the folks who have been practicing a while, that they are breaking the flow of practice by stepping off their mat and coming and looking and then going back and doing. I don't feel that as breaking the flow of practice, especially if, you know, people want to talk about flow state and whatever the words that people use to describe just like a meditative state of mind. You're muted again.
You're breaking the dissociative trance.
Yes. and I just want a classroom to be a classroom again. And that's kind of why I'm stepping away from teaching group asana classes for a while, because I don't really know what that looks like in 2021 on Zoom and in 2021 back in person. But it's time to, I want a context in which I can get a little weirder than, and you can only really get weird when you're in charge of the context.
Ooh, I don't know if I agree with that.
I will stand by that. You can only,
I'm calling horseshit.
You can only,
maybe you don't feel like you can get weird. My daughter took a shit on the rug while I taught. But it got weird.
You still taught a yoga class that people felt like was a yoga class.
I don't know.
I'm talking about more of a deconstruction of what we understand as a yoga class. And I just don't have a lot of confidence that I can do that unless I am helping to set the context well.
Well, you know, the place where I can resonate with that thought is when there's a part of your brain that is always checking that the consumer,
yes,
is enjoying the product. And for the most part, I have trusted that that if I just show up and do what I want to do, that people will find their way to the class
Everland.
the class I'm offering if they want to, you know. And that people that are not into it, I am not trying to convince them that they should be into it. You know, I'm not going to change. I'm not going to apologize for not demoing, first of all, even though I might feel myself writing an apology. But I would like to not apologize for how I'm teaching and just relax into what I value and what I've learned and what I have to offer and just do that. But when you're looking at things like class numbers and whether or not you will still be allowed the platform, then yeah, I understand. And I understand the fear around, you know, if I get really weird and less people like the weirdness, you know, or the thing that's offered, am I, you know, so if there is a different context, one where you set the platform and the framework and you ultimately are responsible for whether or not it is financially viable, one could be free of that. There's other challenges that come with that.
Sure. Of course. Absolutely. But I've already tackled those challenges in my life multiple times. So.
I guess I'm not in, it's like for me, like and it's different for me because I really want to, I guess there's part of me that's like, if I'm not easily accessible, then I worry about a vanishing ilk of outsiders if all, I don't know. There's part of me that's like, no, you carry me out of my class kicking and screaming. You carry me out kicking and screaming and tell me that it doesn't matter that I'm here. Even if I don't have the best attended class, like tell me that it doesn't matter. I don't know. And I'm talking about this. I mean, it's tricky because, you know, I teach only at Down Under right now. So, but I've taught many other places and felt this feeling everywhere I teach, with the exception of a gym. Mm-hmm. Although that gym was starting to creep toward that model. Cause at first they were like, whatever, it's valuable that the gym offer this. We don't care if people come, but the fact that this offering is here gets people to buy memberships, sure. You know, even if they don't use it. And so there was like a freedom to just, you know, and then they started ticketing classes and that.
Yeah. Oh, I think this is all stuff that's going to really, I think there are going to be some.
I just burped.
There's going to be quite a bit of it's going to be quite a bit of burping in 2021. But there's also going to be quite a bit of reimagining what this, you know, what it is to teach yoga in this culture. And was that just a crotch rocket that went by?
Yeah. Did you hear it?
I did hear it. Yes.
That's how I teach, with that kind of shit. Just like, it's trucks and buses and crotch rockets. That's it. That's all we have in Riverside, East Providence.
There's the title of the episode, Trucks and Buses and Crotch Rockets.
I'm sorry, I don't live in a cul-de-sac.
But here's the other thing too, is I do feel like there is a, fuck it, I'll just say it. I really miss the community that was at Bow Street. It was just an impossible situation to have that much overhead for that small of a studio. And but and maybe I said this the other week, but it's taken me more than a year to realize that I did some good things there, and that the I don't know where that thought leads. You know, just that I want to be continuing the work that I was doing there in whatever form I can do it. And whether if that means that it's not my full-time job, then that means that it's not my full-time job. But yeah, I would say it's probably taken me until this past month to not think of that whole kind of 4-year cycle as a failure.
You know, from the outside, it's I don't get to see often how hard you are on yourself until right now. And the fact that that's how you perceive, you know, and I don't know how helpful it is to hear, but it's like there was no fucking failure in that.
Yeah.
None. And if anything, there was some really, really beautiful timing with, you know, like there was some deeply perfect timing around all of it. And I think that, you know, looking forward, you get to reimagine community and audience.
Yeah.
You know what I do sometimes when I'm not feeling, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's called meditation. You sit with your feelings and you watch them like weather patterns in the sky.
So whenever Fez or myself is having a rough time, there is the perennial joke of, have you tried meditation? Which is like just enough of a dick move to like make the other one laugh.
I'm so glad I also thought of that joke. Yeah, that and like when you're injured and someone's like, yeah, you know, yoga could be really good for that.
Speaking of audience.
Yes.
We have some exciting things happening that we can't quite tell you all about yet.
It's big and it's in your bloomers. It's big and it's in your pants. I was going to try to make a musical about everybody's got bloomers. Anyways.
So I went through today and put all of the episodes back up on the free feed. So the whole feed is there for all to see. And we, you know, we're going back to the old school days of just, you know, asking for donations whenever folks feel called to donate to help this little endeavor keep chugging along. And there may or may not also be some swag.
I've only been asking for it for how long? How long? Ryan.
So stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. This is our version of a Jay Brown.
Man, I need to tune back into Jay Brown because I'm getting rusty on my impression. I don't want to give it all away right now. And I'm afraid if I say it out loud that some of it might not come true. But that's ridiculous. That was almost good. And the voice, I'm realizing, sounds a lot like, what's that actor's name? Like a little bit of, from Heathers. Come on, from the 80s.
But what's the actor's name?
It's the one that Skeet Larson or whatever was impersonating. Oh my God. With this, he had greasy black hair and squinty eyes. Somebody right now is listening and screaming the actor's name.
Oh, was it Christian Slater?
Yep, Christian Slater. Yes, Christian Slater. That is the origin of my Jay Brown voice.
Accurate. That is the origin of your Jay.
But also a little bit of Jack Nicholson.
Yes.
It's a little bit. I hope you're taking this as a compliment, Jay, if you're listening. It really is. You have a beautiful voice. You do. I like listening to your voice.
Well, that was fun.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Bye.
I won't stop.